John chapter 9. We're going to pick it up in verse 13. Jesus had stirred up some controversy in the temple. There was that issue about the woman caught in adultery and how he forgave her and he told her to go and sin no more. And then he went on to talk about who he was, about how, and he got down to right down to the brass tacks. He says that he calls himself the I Am. He's laying claim to the name of God, the name Yahweh. He's claiming to be God. And when he did that, kind of everything broke loose in the temple because the Jewish folks in the temple didn't like a man claiming to be God. And that's actually kind of can't blame him for that, because if one of you claim to be God, if I claim to be God, sure, take me out and stone me. That's okay. The problem is that with him, it was right. It was true. Let's review what we did last week. Is this sound up? Okay.
As Jesus was walking along, he saw a man who had been born blind.
Teacher, whose sin caused him to be born blind? Was it his own or his parents' sin?
His blindness has nothing to do with his sins or his parents' sins. He is blind so that God's power might be seen at work in him. As long as it is day, he must keep on doing the work of him who sent me. Night is coming, when no one can work. While I am in the world, I am the light for the world.
After he said this, Jesus spat on the ground and made some mud with the spittle. He rubbed the mud on the man's eyes.
Go and wash your face in the pool of Siloam.
This name means sent. So the man went, washed his face, and came back, seeing. His neighbors then, and the people who had seen him begging before this, asked, "Isn't this the man who used to sit and beg?"
He's the one. No, he isn't. He just looks like him.
I am the man.
How is it that you can now see?
The man called Jesus made some mud, rubbed it on my eyes, and told me to go to Siloam and wash my face. So I went. And as soon as I washed, I could see. Where is he? I don't know.
Love that line. We pick it up in verse 13. And so it says, they brought him who formerly was blind to the Pharisees. Now, these friends, these neighbors, they kind of want to try to figure this out. What's going on? What's happening? And they take him to the most religious people they know, the Pharisees. Verse 14, now it was a Sabbath when Jesus made the clay and opened his eyes. It was a Sabbath. The Pharisees were the strictest sect in Judaism. We would call them the Orthodox, the conservative, the ultra-Orthodox. They carefully studied and tried to obey all of God's laws. And just to be extra careful, they even made up a few on their own, just to make sure that they were being really good and really obedient. Jesus is constantly challenging the Pharisees about their regulations. And especially, we find him often rubbing up against them with these Sabbath regulations they came up with. The actual Sabbath law is in Exodus 20, and it says, it's very simple. It says, remember the Sabbath day to keep it holy. 6 days you shall labor and do all your work, but the seventh day is the Sabbath of the Lord your God. In it you shall do no work, you nor your son, nor your daughter, nor your male servant, nor your female servant, nor your cattle, nor your stranger who is within your gates. Now, the Pharisees are very much like us. When God keeps things simple, we make things complicated. Now, within Judaism, over time, the Jews developed a complex series of rules and regulations. We would call it their oral traditions, things passed down word of mouth from one person to the next. And they explained that the first five books of Moses, it just doesn't make sense. Moses was up on that mountain for 40 days and 40 nights, and he went back up again, and all he comes back with is just these five little books. There must have been more that God said. And so over time, they began to develop these traditions that they would pass on of all the extra stuff that Moses must have spoken, that God must have spoken to Moses up on the mountain. Around 200 years after Jesus, these traditions were written down because they were afraid they were going to lose them all. And they were written down in what's called the Mishnah. The Mishnah. The Mishnah is quite extensive. The section that deals with the Sabbath, with Shabbat, contains, remember just a couple of verses in Scripture? Well, their section on Shabbat contains 24 chapters. What does it mean to honor the Sabbath? They got pretty detailed. Like one whole chapter is nothing but what you can and can't put on an animal on the Sabbath. I don't know if it really dealt with the little poodle things or not. But this is the extent that their rules and regulations went to. Now that's just wrong, right? You see, that's just wrong. Okay. Sorry. Some of the traditions involve the things that we're going to deal with. For example, an eye salve or a plaster for the eye, if it was put on for pleasure, was lawful, but not for healing. So ladies, when you do like the avocado stuff, you know, or whatever, you know, that would be okay. But try to heal somebody? No, can't do that. This is the way their regulations went. And so the fact that Jesus healed this man with the mud on the Sabbath, right away, John's cluing us in, we got some trouble up ahead. Verse 15. Then the Pharisees also asked him again how he had received his sight. And he said to them, well, he put clay on my eyes, and I washed, and I see. Very, very simple stuff. Therefore, some of the Pharisees said, this man is not from God because he does not keep the Sabbath. Others said, how can a man who is a sinner do such signs? And there was division among them. In other words, there were actually some Pharisees that were siding with Jesus. Some looked at what Jesus was doing and saying, you got to be kidding me. How can he do this stuff and not be from God? Others were saying, oh, no. This man is not from God, because he's not obeying their Sabbath traditions, their regulations. I want to speak for a moment about dangerous traditions. Because the Pharisees placed such a high value on these oral traditions, which in Jesus' day hadn't been written down yet, but because they placed such value on these traditions, they are coming to the conclusion that Jesus is not from God. That's what their traditions are leading them to think. It's not uncommon for the traditions of the Pharisees to kind of lead them down the wrong path. Jesus is constantly challenging them, like in Mark 7:9, where he said, you skillfully sidestep God's law in order to hold on to your own tradition. He's talking about the Mishnah, that they would prefer to do what the Mishnah says than what God himself has actually said. Now, I'll just let you know right up front, I'm going to offend a lot of people today. So if you get offended over the next few minutes, get over it, because everyone else is going to be offended by the end of the morning. So I'm sorry. And we'll see if anybody actually comes back next week. I don't know. Historically, this is one of the problems with the Catholic Church. Within Catholic doctrine, they state that tradition has the same weight, if not more. In fact, I'll bet Ron could correct me on this. Tradition has the same weight, if not more weight, than actual Scripture itself. Now, not the Jewish Mishnah, but their own traditions. And so if some goofy thing happens in a church and everybody likes it and they think, well, let's do this again, and it becomes a habit, a tradition, then you kind of adopt it and you start doing goofy things. Like, whoever came up with the idea of wearing stuff like that? I don't know, but somewhere along the line, somebody thought, wouldn't it be really cool if you would just like to wear the stuff, you know? I am so glad that's not our tradition. I don't know about you. I don't know. Do you think I'd look good in something like that? Please, we can stop laughing. I don't want to get too offensive here. In 1903, the Russian Tsar noticed a sentry posted for no apparent reason on the Kremlin grounds. Now, I was going to do this next bit in a Russian accent, but I can't. It keeps coming out in a German accent, so I won't say it. So the Tsar says, "What are you guarding?" I don't know. The captain just ordered me to this post, the sentry replied. The Tsar called the captain. His answer, well, written regulations specify a guard was to be assigned to that area. The Tsar ordered a search to find out why. The archives finally yielded to the answer. It was 1776, over 100 years earlier, when Catherine the Great had found that someone had planted a rose bush and that she discovered the first flower of spring on this rose bush. And so she said, post a sentry here so that no one tramples that flower underfoot. But here, 100 years later, they're still posting sentries even though there's no rose bushes left. Tradition takes over when our brains stop working. Now, this problem is not limited to Catholics. We all like to be comfortable. And sometimes the easier thing is just to do the way we've always done it, isn't it? We like that. I like to know that it's what it's going to be like. You know, you come to church and you know the first song's going to be something a little bit upbeat. We're going to have to be standing up for the first song. And then we sit down and then somebody gets up and talks about what's happening at the church. And then we stand back up and we sing another fast song. And then we sit down and we sing a couple more songs. And we get comfortable with those kinds of things. In many churches, you know, when they've been around for a long time, after a while you're going to hear people say, well, but this is the way we've always done it. Or we've never done it that way before. Now, for the first couple of years when we started the church, is about 16 years ago, we were all kind of tickled because, like, we're starting our own traditions. This is kind of cool. We don't have to even worry about breaking the mold because there ain't no mold. You know, it's kind of fun. But you know what? We've developed our own traditions, and it's not all that bad. Some of the stuff is good stuff. Sound up. One more clip.
You can't stop it. It's coming to a town near you. It used to be called contemporary. Some call it relevant. We're so cool, we call it contemporvent.
Young, hip guy welcoming all with graphic tee and cool glasses. I welcome everybody with arms wide open, revealing my tattoo so you know I have a past. Quirky transition to band. Invite everyone to stand. Let's do it.
This is the song that everyone knows. It's the song that everyone knows. Nobody knows this song. I want you to learn this song and buy my record in the bookstore after the service. I just want to
to invite the ushers up as we prepare for our offering. Feel free to give if you feel led. It's between you and God, but we're tracking it.
One man has all the answers.
I have all the answers. Showing a picture of a puppy and or a baby from an impoverished third world nation. Speaking softly to draw you in. And then emphatically, driving home my point. On pause. Whispering. Repetition. Still pausing. Pained expression. Long prayer. So that the worship leader can get back on stage.
This is the closing song with strings that'll make you cry.
Coming soon to your town, a new kind of church. You will be lifted high and challenged to grow. We call that Growtivation. You call this Sunday Morning.
You know, somebody was suggesting that I was pointing fingers at some other church. I was kind of thinking that sounded like us, personally. There's just too much in that to relate to us. Be careful about thinking that your tradition makes things right. Now, I thought... a long pause. You know, what's most important is that you come into contact with God, not puppies, not guitars, but that you come into contact with God. It might be in a church that sings hymns. Did you know, see, some of us were so snooty that we have to have guitars and drums, you know, for it to be worship. You know what? People can actually worship God with hymns and an organ. You're thinking, oh no. Oh yes. It's about what's in the heart. It's not the tradition. It's what's coming in your heart. You know, it might be in a church that's more contemporary or whatever. Just find Jesus. Be careful about traditions. The Pharisees elevated their traditions to the point where they're now calling Jesus a sinner. Can you believe that? See, that's when your traditions have gone a little too far. You with me? Okay, verse 17. They said to the blind man again, "What do you say about him because he opened your eyes?" He said, "Well, he's a prophet." They kind of want to know what this guy's opinion is. This guy isn't real, he's not real educated. All he knows is it sounds like this guy is from God. But the Jews did not believe concerning him that he had been blind and received his sight until they called the parents of him who had received his sight. They think, well, Jesus is obviously a sinner, so something's wrong here. How can a sinner heal a guy who's been born blind? Maybe he wasn't blind to begin with. So they call the parents. And they ask them, saying, "Is this your son, who you say was born blind? How then does he now see?" His parents answered them and said, "We know that this is our son and that he was born blind. But by what means he now sees, we do not know. Or who opened his eyes, we do not know. He is of age. Ask him. He will speak for himself." His parents said these things because they feared the Jews, for the Jews had already agreed that if anyone confessed that he was the Christ, he would be put out of the synagogue. Sorry, there's the parents. Put out of the synagogue, excluded from everyone else. We might call it excommunication. Now, to the Jews in Jesus' day, there was two types of excommunication. There was one called nidui, which was basically this: everybody has to stay 6 feet away from you. And you just got to, you know, if you are that kind of a thing, you know, everybody's got to stay away. It lasts for 30 days. And as long as you repent, then you can come back and everybody can give you hugs. But nobody touches you for 30 days. The other one, because this is not the one that they use, the other one is called Karen. And this one is where a person is completely cut off from every other Jewish person. This is the one that the folks are being threatened with. It was a very solemn ceremony. I keep the sound. Is the sound still up? Because we need to keep it up. It would start off with a trumpet. I'm working on my shofar thing, but still now I'll let this guy's much more proficient at it. It would start with a trumpet blast. Then they would light a candle. And then they would pronounce a curse. This is some of one of the curses. Let great and real stripes be upon him. That's not painting lines on him. That's whipping a person. And many and violent diseases. Let his star be dark in the clouds. Let him be for indignation, wrath, and anger. Let his silver and his gold be given to others. And on and on and on it would go. And then the candle would be blown out. Kind of a picture that this person is no longer worthy of heavenly light. Pretty serious stuff. And it was actually working because people were too scared to talk about Jesus, like the parents. So the parents said, verse 23, therefore his parents said, well, he is of age, ask him. So they again called the man who was blind and said to him, give God the glory. We know that this man is a sinner. They're giving him a chance. You're giving him a chance to change his story. Let's give God the glory. He answered and said, whether he is a sinner or not, I do not know. One thing I know, that though I was blind, now I see. I like this. One thing I know. I'll talk for a minute about opinions and facts. If you haven't been offended yet, you will be. I like this fellow. He knows what he knows. He is aware of what he knows, and he's also aware of what he doesn't know. I don't know whether this guy's a sinner. I do know that I used to be blind, and now I see. We have lots of opinions about a lot of things, and some of our opinions can be quite strong. Sometimes our opinions are actually not necessarily based in fact. Sometimes our opinions are based on stuff that people have told us. Sometimes it's based on who we are. There's a story about an English professor. He wrote some words on the blackboard. I hope you can read the screen because I'm not going to read the words out loud. I want you to read the words to yourself of what he wrote, and he wrote this on the blackboard, and then he instructed the class, I want you to copy this down on a piece of paper, and I want you to put the correct punctuation into this sentence. How would you punctuate? How would you say this sentence? And he gave them a minute or two, and then he asked them to hand in the papers. All the men wrote this: woman without her man is nothing. Now, I'm not going to ask for a show of hands of how many of you thought that that was the way you should do it, because you'll be in trouble. This is the way the women wrote it. Woman, without her, man is nothing. Now, which one's right? Well, it's a matter of opinion. You follow me? When it comes to politics, it is not uncommon for persons' opinions to be just that, opinions. It's not wrong to have opinions. I'm not here to tell you that your opinions are wrong. But when you think that your opinion is fact, it's possible that you could be wrong. If your opinion is based on a certain news commentator who leans one way or the other, and you don't take time to actually check what they're saying, it's possible you might have a problem. Now, I know some of you are thinking, yeah, those people that watch Fox News ought to get their act together. And some of you are thinking, yeah, the people that watch CNN or MSNBC, they better get their facts straight. And you know what? You are a prime example, if you're thinking of that. You're a prime example of what I'm talking about. Know what you know. This fellow understands there's some stuff I know, and there's some stuff I don't know. Are you following me here? We have some pretty strong ideas about God, some very strong opinions about God. And it's good to know what you know and not confuse facts with opinions. It is possible that some of you, actually we all fall in this category, but it's very possible that some of you have some wrong opinions about God. It may be something that you heard your parents say or do, and you never quite picked it up except that you believed it. Could be something that a teacher said in a classroom or something, and you never thought to challenge it, and so you swallowed it. You know, I think probably like the best way to find out who God is to read his book. Some of us are in the habit of learning to read through the Bible a lot. Every year I go through the Bible. And I got to tell you that over the years, my ideas about God change ever so slightly. Because every time I read more about him, I start thinking, you know, I think I'm a little off on this. I don't want to rock your world too much, but gang, if we need to learn to tell the difference between opinion and facts. Are you with me? Okay, let's read. Let's move on. And so this is what the guy says. He says, though I was blind, now I see. You kind of think somebody ought to write a song with that or something. It kind of sounds familiar. You know, nobody can argue this with him. He used to be blind. And now he can see. Nobody can argue that with him because he knows the facts. From time to time, gang, you will run into people who appear light years ahead of you in intellect. For some of us, that's not hard. Just about everybody I run into is like light years ahead of me. So that's not a hard thing. Sometimes we get a little put off, a little scared to interact and to simply speak up about what we do know. Because some of these people who claim to know a lot about God actually only know about him. Some of you actually know him. Don't be afraid of speaking up. Don't be afraid of being like this blind man. You know what? All I know is this. I know him. I know God. Don't you? Don't be afraid to speak up. Verse 26. Then they said to him, What did he do to you? How did he open your eyes? He answered them, I told you already, and you did not listen. Why do you want to hear it again? Do you also want to become his disciples? I kind of think there's a little bit of sarcasm here. I don't know, just a little teeny bit. Then they reviled him and said, you are his disciple, but we are Moses' disciples. We know that God spoke to Moses. For this fellow, we do not know where he is from. The man answered and said to them, why, this is a marvelous thing that you do not know where he is from, yet he has opened my eyes. Now we know that God does not hear sinners. But if anyone is a worshiper of God and does his will, he hears him. Since the world began, it has been unheard of that anyone opened the eyes of one who was born blind. If this man were not from God, he could do nothing. Now, a couple of things I want to point out in this man's statement. He says, God does not hear sinners. This is actually a true statement. All through the scripture, we see this theme over and over again. Like Psalm 66:18, if I regard iniquity in my heart, the Lord will not hear. Some people don't realize this. And they think that, you know, it doesn't make any difference who you are. God will hear you. You know what? You have to deal with your sin first. Verse 32, he says, since the world has begun, it has never been heard that anyone opened the eyes of one who's born blind. There is no record in the Old Testament of a blind person being healed. Search the word blind. It appears a lot in the Old Testament, but nothing, not a single thing about somebody who was healed. On the other hand, Isaiah, speaking about the Messiah, he writes, in that day, the deaf shall hear the words of the book, and the eyes of the blind shall see out of obscurity and out of darkness. So there was a prophecy that when Messiah came, things would change. He says in verse 33, if this man were not from God, he could do nothing. Now, it's a good point, but I need to keep you right on track here. The truth is, miracles alone are not enough. Miracles alone are not enough. Miraculous power can also be from the other side. Paul talks about the Antichrist and says this man will come to do the work of Satan with counterfeit power and signs and miracles. Deuteronomy 13 says, if there arises among you a prophet or a dreamer of dreams, and he gives you a sign or a wonder, and the sign or the wonder comes to pass of which he spoke to you, saying, let us arise and go after other gods, which you have not known, let us serve them, you shall not listen to the words of that prophet or that dreamer of dreams, for the Lord your God is testing you to know whether you love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul. It's great that a person can perform a miracle. That's cool, but it is more important that you and I learn to ask, what do they say about God? If a person performs a miracle and points you some other direction than the God of the Bible, a little warning light ought to go on. You know, the psychics, the New Age stuff, you ought to have little warning lights go off. What do they say about God? And just to be totally, brutally honest, this is where the Pharisees are coming from. This is why they're having a hard time about Jesus, because he's not. But see, the thing is that they're judging him by the wrong standard. They're judging him by their tradition and not by the scripture. But they're using this principle. They're saying, well, he can't be of God because he's leading us away from our, not from our God, but from our tradition. So this is what's happening. Verse 34. They answered and said to him, so this guy says this great stuff, you know. And they say, well, you were completely born in sins, and are you teaching us? And they cast him out. Now, see, this is a very, very smart thing when you're arguing with somebody, and they come up with a better argument. You call them names. So that's what he's doing. That's what they're doing. They're saying, well, you were just, you know, like, your mother wears army boots or something, you know. Like, and they cast him out. They excommunicate him. Verse 35. Jesus heard that they cast him out, and when he found him, he said to him, do you believe? Do you believe? And the emphasis in the Greek is on that word you. Do you believe in the Son of God? I love the fact that Jesus hunted the fellow down. He found out what had happened, and he hunted him down. I love this about the Lord. It's a principle here, gang. Jesus stands with those who will stand for him. You take a stand for God, and he'll stand right with you. Peter writes, so be happy when you are insulted for being a Christian, for then the glorious Spirit of God rests upon you. You see this in the story of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego in the book of Daniel chapter 3, where King Nebuchadnezzar comes up with this crazy idea that everybody ought to bow down to his idol. And if you don't, you get tossed into the fiery furnace. And so the band kicks up, and it's time for everybody to bow down, and those three boys stood standing. And they got tossed into the fire. They got tossed into the fire. And Nebuchadnezzar's watching all this happen, and he's going, I thought we threw three guys in there. And it says, look, he said, I see four men loose, walking in the midst of the fire, and they are not hurt, and the form of the fourth is like the Son of God. The Yeah, because they weren't alone in the fire. And when you take a stand for Him, He'll be there with you. Don't be afraid of taking a stand for Him. He's not going to abandon you. Verse 36, He answered and said, Jesus said, do you believe in the Son of God? And He answered and said, well, who is He, Lord, that I may believe in Him? And Jesus said to him, you have both seen Him, and it is He who is talking with you. I think this is like a hugely intense moment. Because you've got to think about it. This guy has never seen Jesus. He heard Him. He felt the mud smeared on his eyes. He heard the voice. He did what the voice said. But now the voice sounds kind of familiar. And he realizes it's Him. And Jesus doesn't say, yo, dude, it's me. Look what Jesus says. He says, you have both seen Him and it's He who's talking with you. You've already heard the voice. And now, guess what, pal? You get to see Him. Why? Because He's been healed by Him. He said, Lord, I believe. And he worshiped Him. He takes that step of trusting Him. That's the step you and I all need to take. I don't just learn about Him, but I learn to trust Him. He crosses that line. If you want to say, when does He become born again? Probably this would be like the moment. Where he takes that choice, where he puts his life in his hands. He realizes who Jesus is. And he says, I'm following you. It says he worshiped Him. The word basically means that he's falling down on his face before Jesus. Now, this man has been cast out of the synagogue. And Jesus finds him. This is what Jesus said back in John 6. All that the Father gives me will come to me. And the one who comes to me, I will by no means cast out. Buddy, you come to me, there is no casting out. I love it. It's kind of like our Jesus collects castaways. You know what? Everybody else may have given up on you. Not Jesus. Verse 39. Jesus said, for judgment I have come into this world, that those who do not see may see, and that those who see may be made blind. When Jesus enters a situation, something will happen. And people who realize that they are blind get the lights turned on. And people who think they've had life figured out, the lights go out. Another translation says, I came into the world to bring everything into the clear light of day, making all the distinctions clear so that those who have never seen will see, and those who have made a great pretense of seeing will be exposed as blind. Verse 40, then some of the Pharisees who were with him heard these words and said to him, are we blind also? And Jesus said to them, if you were blind, you would have no sin. But now you say, we see, therefore your sin remains. Another translation, if you were really blind, you would be blameless. But since you claim to see everything so well, you're accountable for every fault and failure. Last few words. I'm going to talk about self-deception. Self-deception. The whole idea of blindness and the Pharisees is all about self-deception. They claimed to know God, and they didn't. They claimed to be something that they weren't. They thought they had it together, and they're so wrong. It's kind of like some of the people who try out for American Idol.
And I'm currently studying at UC Berkeley right now. But it's kind of odd, like, why I chose to even audition in the first place. Because my major is civil engineering, which is not totally not related to music. But I really like music. I want to make music my living.
Talk to me, tell me your name. You blow me off like it's all the same. You lit a fuse and I'm taking away like a bomb. Yeah, baby. Talk to me, tell me your sign. You switching sides like a Gemini. You playing games and now you're hitting my heart like a drum. Yeah, baby.
Thank
I'm
you.
Wasted by the way.
Thank you.
You can't sing, you can't dance, so what do you want me to say?
It's hard to hear that, isn't it? And it's kind of, you know, part of us wants to chuckle at this. I know the tendency is for us to laugh at William. Part of me wants to cry for him. Because, and I don't, I have a hard time figuring out, did he ever really get it? We stand back and we go, buddy, this is not your thing. Self-deception. Pharisees thought they had life wired, but they didn't know God. Do you think you have your life figured out? You have everything calculated out, everything planned out, and Jesus is not a part of it? I have horrible news for you. You look a little bit like William. We need him. We need him oh so much. Don't ignore what he wants to do in your life. Don't be self-deceived. God wants you to know him. Let's stand and pray. And I'll pray a long prayer so the worship team can come in.